Hello everyone and welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is Wednesday, May 7, 2025. I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Warid Ahmed, and we have a great show for you today. Today we're going to tell you about the UAE has unveiled this ambitious Islamic finance and tourism strategy. Secondly, Trump is not coming to the Gulf alone. He's bringing Wall Street with him. And finally, the Egyptian-American founder of Whoop has revealed the first prototype that they made many years ago.
So starting with the very first story, the UAE has announced a major national strategy to expand its Islamic finance and halal industry sectors. The move was revealed during a UAE cabinet meeting chaired by His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Vice President, Prime Minister, and the ruler of Dubai.
Now, the UAE aims to, you know, more than double the value of Islamic banking assets from 986 billion dirhams today to 2.56 trillion dirhams within the next 6 years. Now, sukuk issuances, which are Sharia-compliant bonds, are also expected to rise more than 660 billion dirhams by 2031.
And to implement the strategy, a new committee will be formed led by the governor of the UAE Central Bank. Officials say the initiative supports wider national goals to diversify the economy and strengthen the UAE's global standing in Islamic finance.
Now, the cabinet also turned its focus to tourism. Sheikh Mohammed said the sector supported over 800,000 jobs in 2023 and contributed more than 236 billion dirhams to the economy in 2024. Now, the target is 450 billion dirhams by 2031.
And in health and safety, the cabinet approved updates to the National Biosecurity Framework. The goal is to strengthen prevention systems, emergency response, and scientific research capabilities.
Now, finally, the cabinet reviewed the SME sector's growth. The UAE ranked first globally in the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor for a fourth year, with SME licenses rising 160%. Now, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed reaffirmed support for small businesses as vital drivers of the national economy. And this is completely exciting, I feel, because obviously with globalization, digitalization, the rise of AI that we're seeing, and, you know, the push of different cultures that are coming to the UAE, you know, the culture is going to change. But I think strategies like these, they're so important for Muslims to have.
Yeah, and the main thing about Islamic finances is that a lot of people in the Middle East region, they move away from conventional interest rate banking because it's not allowed in Islam. It's called riba, and there's a lot of Islamic study on it. It's completely not normal for Muslims. That is why they go into Sharia-compliant apps. That is why there's a whole market around Islamic finances. So Sharia compliant. We talked about, what was the name of the startup we talked about yesterday? Egyptian startup. Money Fellows. They're Sharia compliant. You see a lot of, Tabby is Sharia compliant. Tamara is Sharia compliant. So this term, it's not only used as a USP. It's actually a business model and a category which no one taps in the West. And a lot of people in the Middle East use it because it's very important for people. There's coins, crypto coins, which are Islamically allowed. So people are now using those to trade in crypto Islamically. And we talked about sukuk. Sukuk is the real name of, like, an Islamic bond. We talked about it. I remember Bloomberg did a report. They have a Bloomberg index for the best performing sukuks, best performing bonds in the world. And UAE topped the list this year. Like last year, whole data, they topped the list thanks to Imar, and I think it was Aldar who had the best sukuk returns. So bond is very simple. A bond is you give money for 5 years and you expect a return after like 10%, 15%, 8% return after 5 years, 10 years, however long bond you sign or take, the bigger the interest or the amount you'll get. With Islamic sukuks, it's very simple. It should be backed by a real world asset. Usually in West, the bond is not backed by real world assets. It's backed by investment assurances and interest assurances. In Sukuk, you have to have a building, you have to have a car, you have to have a physical business or something. There should be a physical worldly asset attached to it. So it's very nice that they, after all this, they're trying to double it. from nearly 100 billion, 900 and something, to 2.56 trillion or 2.36. It's a very nice way, and it shows that they're not only using conventional methods. They want to increase their stake in the Islamic finance, in the other alt categories also.
You know what I also think it is, Majid? I feel that this is them being aware of the fact that in the years to come, whether in the months to come, in fact, there are going to be so many Westerners, so many foreigners that are going to come to the UAE. And, you know, when you have a lot of foreigners who come to a country and, you know, an Arab country like this where Islam is so important, values, our culture, we're so rooted in our culture here, you know, change naturally does happen. So I think this is them being completely aware and already finding a solution for the people who might come out and say that, you know, you're not making us
Westernizing.
Exactly. You're too Westernized. You're not creating a safe haven for us. So I think this is them acting before that problem is even
here.
Very
nice preemptive move, and hopefully, it will add more money to the UAE economy. That's always the grand plan, to be honest. And talking about a lot of money, Wall Street's top names are heading to Riyadh as U.S. President Donald Trump prepares for a high-profile visit to Saudi Arabia next week. Trump will be joined by a delegation of U.S. business leaders attending the Saudi-U.S. Investment Forum, scheduled for May 13 at the King Abdulaziz International Conference Center.
Now, the forum will gather more than 125 speakers and over 2,000 delegates covering strategic sectors, including energy, AI, finance, healthcare, and defense. Now, among confirmed speakers, you have Saudi Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman, Saudi National Bank CEO Tariq Al-Saddan, and FIFA President Gianni Infantino.
And from the U.S. side, senior executives from BlackRock, Citigroup, Alphabet, and IBM are expected to attend, including Larry Fink, Jane Fraser, Ruth Pura, and Arvind Krishna. Many of these firms already hold significant investments in the kingdom, often participating in Saudi Arabia's flagship Future Investment Initiative, which is FII for short.
Yeah, now the forum's website states that American investors hold nearly $54 billion in foreign direct investment stock in the kingdom, making up close to 25% of Saudi Arabia's total FDI.
And this year, Riyadh announced a potential $600 billion investment package. We all know about it. We've talked about it so much. I hope finally it is signed. And sources say Trump hopes to push that number closes to $1 trillion. That also, we know, it's such a nice, well-set story now that I think we're waiting for approvals now. So Saudi Arabia also aims to secure over $100 billion in FDI annually by 2030, a five-fold increase from last year.
Now, in the forum, it's just the start. A GCC-US summit is reportedly planned for the following day, bringing together Gulf leaders and Trump to discuss regional issues, arms deals, AI cooperation, and Gulf investments in the U.S. And just speaking of arms deal, you know, it was reported that the U.S. is going to have a $100 billion arms deal with Saudi Arabia, one of the largest in history. And we're going to see more to come about that when he visits. But, you know, Majid brought up a really good point yesterday. It's that, you know, they're not just going there for Trump. They're going for the fact that the sovereign wealth funds in the Gulf are worth nearly $4 trillion. You know, you have Saudi Arabia's public investment fund. I believe we discuss it a lot. They have more than $900 billion.
Yeah.
And then you have the UAE. You know, there's ADQ, ADIA, and
Mubadala.
Yeah, and Mubadala.
Yeah.
And, you know, they near like $1.5 trillion. And for me, what I find extremely impressive is Qatar. Qatar Investment Authority has over $500 billion.
Yeah.
And what all of them are doing is they're coming to target that capital. And I don't think we mentioned this, but I believe also the CEO of Blackstone is going to be there. And, you know, these are players that have already established their offices here, and they're just coming to target that capital more.
Yeah. And the idea is that when you have a leader coming, a foreign leader, first trip, these people always will be in the shadow. And it's a very nice time to, since Saudi Arabia and UAE and Qatar, all of the hosts of this Gulf trip, will be in a giving mood, will be in a trade mood, will be in a to-and-fro mood that, okay, let's make a deal, let's make this trip historic.
Yeah.
It's a very nice time
That's
for all the other people to jump in and be like, okay, since you're giving this, let's do this.
Since you said yes once, you can say yes twice.
So it's a very nice giving mood right now in the Gulf in terms of investments. And let's see what will happen. It's going to be a remarkable, remarkable event. Those 3 days will be very busy, but we'll keep you updated with whatever big thing happens on our socials.
But Majid, you know how you mentioned that it's a you know, they're in a very giving mood. I just want to mention that, you know, just a few days ago, the Trump Organization has signed a deal with Qatari Global, or was it Andar
Global? DR, which is a Qatari company, and Dar Global is a global company.
And basically, they signed a deal, and they're trying to build an 18 golf course in Qatar, in Doha, and villas too. So, you know, there's definitely a sequence of event that's going on here.
Yeah, because he didn't visit Qatar last time. He visited only Saudi Arabia. This year, a lot of people are saying that this investment by Qatar and the whole deal, I think one of the reasons is that he chose Qatar also because they're getting his branded stuff. So it's a conflict of interest if you look at it closely, because he's the president of US. He should come as the president of US. He shouldn't have his personal business interests. But with Trump, anything is expected and anything is possible. That's the whole crux of the story with Trump. And let's talk about one Egyptian-American entrepreneur here. A very nice story. Will Ahmed has unveiled the very first prototype of VOOP. The picture that you can see if you're watching the show, and if you're listening, just go and see the picture on LinkedIn. It's such a nice old-school thing with wires. So the wearable health tracker that has grown into a global fitness tech giant, the device was originally called Bobo. B-O-B-O, it marked the beginning of Whoop's journey back in 2012 at the Harvard Innovation Lab, where Will Ahmed co-founded the company with classmates John Capodilupo and Aurelien Nicolai.
Now, Ahmed, who captained Harvard's squash team, was driven by a lack of tools to monitor training and recovery. Now, he turned to medical research to build Whoop's foundation, aiming to unlock human performance with data, as he later explained it.
And from its humble origins, Whoop has grown into a $3.6 billion company, raising more than $400 million in funding, including a $200 million Series F round in 2021. The first consumer model, Whoop 1.0, debuted in 2015, offering screen-free heart rate and sleep tracking, quickly gaining attention from elite athletes like LeBron James.
Subsequent versions brought upgrades. There was Whoop 2.0, which refined its minimalistic design, 3.0, which introduced more advanced sensors and a subscription model that people could, I believe, access through the app, and then 4.0 added personalized coaching and wearable flexibility. Whoop is now available in 56 markets and is being used by over 80% of NFL teams.
Yeah, and in 2024, football star Cristiano Ronaldo joined the brand as both investor and ambassador alongside existing partners like the NFL and PGA Tour. The company now employs more than 1,000 people and recently moved into a new Boston headquarters.
Now, as Whoop continues to compete with fitness giants like Apple and Garmin, Ahmed is already teasing the next version, Whoop 5.0, which me and Majid believe is going to be released today. We're going to find out more for that. His message was, from Bobo to Whoop, 13 years of innovation, and we're just getting started. Now, I think with Ahmed, I find his story, with Will Ahmed, I find his story extremely inspiring. It's because he's Egyptian.
Yeah.
And I think you can see that he has that close relationship to the Middle East by, you know, making sure that not only one of the best players in the world, but also a player in Saudi Arabia is his brand ambassador, Ronaldo. Yeah. And just yesterday, Majid, he was giving a speech at...
In Qatar, there was a Qatar Foundation event where students were present. Yeah, but it was a speech in Arabic.
Basically, what happened, they put a live, but obviously there's a woman who is translating everything. So he is speaking English, but she translated his voice into Arabic. But, you know, we can see that he has such a big presence in the Middle East. Yeah. Have you ever used a Whoop before?
It's amazing, I've seen a lot of people use it. They love it. I'm not into fitness, and I don't want a variable to tell me that my heart rate is not good. I'm scared in that sense.
Oh, I get what
but
you
yeah,
mean.
But I think for people who actually are into fitness, it's their job, it's their bread and butter. Mm. Like athletes, Ronaldo, LeBron James, all the NFL teams, 80% of the NFL teams. The good thing is that it helps you. And you put up a video of it. It was very interesting when a lady was asking him that why there is no screen. And the answer was very clear that it becomes a watch.
It becomes an Apple Watch, and I think that's what distinguishes Whoop as a product.
So Whoop, I think it has a app attached to it, so you can buy the subscription, and for a month it'll tell you your sleep patterns and everything. And wearable tech is not a small industry. This company is nearly $3.5 billion. A lot of other wearable tech companies in the space, they're doing really great. I remember I was talking to Jitin once outside the office, and he told me about some Indian company also. They're into wearable tech, and he was like, they're big.
Do you remember the name? Actually?
No, not interested, so I don't remember the names of these things. But the idea was that he was telling me that in India, that brand is big. Mm. So I think locally, people have these brands in every country. I don't think there is a wearable tech brand in Pakistan. Very good chance for any Pakistani entrepreneur to start it. Mm. But India has this one brand, and I think they recently did something commercially with us as well. That is why Jitin was talking about it. So the idea is that locally we have, China has a very big wearable tech industry, but being the main thing about Whoop is going to a global stage, even with local competitors, that's the main inspiration. You look at Whoop and just like looking at it and seeing that everyone in the world is using it, that is the highlight for me, and that is the highlight for Will Ahmed, an Egyptian-American entrepreneur. Do something on a global scale. And beat competition locally as well.
You're indeed right. Yeah. But, you know, just speaking about competition and businesses, we have a really beautiful segment that is coming up with the national directors of BNI, Anuradha Shah and BJ Shah. So make sure to tune in. And that's a wrap for today with me and Majid.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Smashy Business Show. I have the national directors of BNI UAE with me, Anuradha Shah and BJ Rajnikant Shah. BNI UAE, the country's largest business referral organization, has empowered entrepreneurs through structured networking since 2005. Celebrating its 20th anniversary in 2025, BNI UAE is part of the global BNI network spanning over 77 countries with 1,500 members across 40 chapters. It has generated 3.7 billion dirhams in closed business through this giver's gain philosophy. Now, members benefit from weekly meetings, leadership development, and growth-focused collaboration. To mark its milestone year, BNI UAE will host the BNI UAE Expo 2025 on May 9th and 10th at Jafsa One, welcoming over 2,000 delegates and over 100 exhibitors and global speakers under the theme Beyond. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. So our mission has always been changing the way the world does business. And I think what's changed for us is when we first started off, we were just a very small community. Over the last 20 years, we've got a membership base of 1,500. And what we're trying to do there is, if I can just share, we have, like, in the last 20 years, we've generated over 3 billion dirhams worth of business for our members. But in the last 1 year, that's just, the business has been generated about 700 million. So that's about 20%, just, you know, of the total business. So what we're trying to do here in terms of beyond 20s, we want to be sure that as the community grows, the pool of referrals that come through are just multiply. You know, they increase threefold, fourfold, and there's business available for everyone. What we want to do here, going beyond 20, beyond means stretching yourself in whichever way that means stretching ourselves, but also for our members to do something different, go one step more than they've done before, whether it's helping their fellow members, whether it's networking, whether it's just being immersed in constant learning. But in whatever they do, we want them to go one step more beyond, stretch yourselves. And we want to be sure that as we go beyond 20, we want to be sure each and every member gets value for their time in BNI. That's what BNI 20 means for us in general.
Oh, that's really beautiful. And, you know, I just want to ask you, BJ, referral-based networking is like a part of BNI's DNA. You know, in today's, you know, digital-first world, why do personal referrals and in-person connections still matter for business growth?
You know, I say tech enhances your scale, but business is done through trust. And to do deals, to do business, you need to build relationships. So, yes, you know, there's been transformations. We have a lot of tech and digital coming in. But ultimately, when it comes to doing business with people, people still want to know you, get to, you know, they want to build the trust and the credibility. And that only happens when you meet people in person primarily. What it does is once you met and we made the connection to build and continue strengthen the relationship, you know, it's easy then. So, for example, you know, if I have people that I know across in different parts of the world, because I already know them, it's very easy for me now to get onto a Zoom, for example, and continue that conversation, discuss things. And if I'm meeting somebody for the first time, it's a nice way to probably connect with each other. But ultimately, especially if you're doing significant deals or business, you do want to meet that person. And I think anybody listening to this or watching this will agree that when they choose to do business with people, they want to kind of get a good feel of who these people are and get to know them beyond just who they are on the surface, you know, really get to know them personally. If you really look at all the partnerships that there are out there, when I say partnerships, I'm not generally talking about business partnerships, but, you know, when you get into business with, so if you look at your vendors, your customers, when you have the strongest relationships, it just takes it to a whole different level.
And I completely agree with you. Now, you know, Anuradha, this one's for you. You know, can you walk us through how BNI UAE has grown from just 22 members to over 1,500 today? And, you know, what were the key inflection points in this journey?
Wow, that journey started 20 years ago. When we came here, we didn't know anybody. And that's how BNI first came to us. And we started a group of 22 people. And at that point, I think we were just trying to do it for ourselves in terms of helping BJ's business grow at that point. He was into financial services. And what's changed over the many years is we realized that there's so many new people coming to the region. Mm-hmm. And everybody wants some sort of a structure in the way that they do business, but more than that, they also want to feel part of a community. And over the years, that has really changed and grown into the 1,500 members that we have today. The inflection points I can think of is when there have been dooms in the market, people have come to BNI. And that's because they want to be in a place where they can feel safe and get to learn and know their members or get to know the fellow members and build that trust. Because when everything is going down, trust is the biggest factor that comes in. So when we've heard about the real estate dooms and stuff, we've had the inflection points. We've really grown. Come look at COVID, that period. When everything was shut, we pivoted and we went online. Mm-hmm. And our membership has grown tremendously in there. And through that sort of journey, we were able to, because we pivoted, we were able to offer a digital platform, which we didn't have that kind of a format before. So one of the bigger kind of inflection points have been when it's been dull for the market, I would say. BNI has really boomed in those situations.
If I can add to that.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, we are a franchise, and we have the master franchise for the UAE. So the other inflection point, I would say, would be when we've now gotten more franchises on board. Because, you know, there is equity ownership of the brand. So when you've got more people who take that up, they also now want to, you know, look at this just as if it was their own business. Our members look at it as their own business as well. So I think taking on more people.
Absolutely. And they're able to, what I would say, service our members better, because as the community grows, you need more hands on the deck. And so with having more franchisees on board, they're able to service our members. We want to be sure every member gets business. And there's a lot of effort that goes into ensuring that that happens.
It's a people business, yeah.
So, you know, having more hands on deck, especially with executive directors, as we call them to be, it has really helped in getting the word out there, members getting value for joining the organization as well.
You know how I just like mentioned that, you know, you guys started 20 years ago and, you know, you said that you had just arrived around that time in the UAE 20 years ago. You know, I want to know, like, where did you arrive from? You know, how did that shape your experience here? You know, how did you guys feel as new foreigners in the country and how did that build what BNI is?
Going back to those years, it's quite nostalgic. You know, anybody who's been around in that time, 2004, 2005, there's a lot of buzz. I mean, look, that buzz is always continuing in Dubai, no doubt about it. But if you look back, you cast back, what are those days like? You know, they just announced the Palm project. Real estate was literally just at the cusp of taking off, opening it up to the world with freehold and everything else. So there was a, I think that was around the time when there was a good influx of people coming in. We had been to Dubai a couple of times before.
As every day on holiday.
You know, I remember in one of the long weekends that we were here, because it's just Dubai, everybody loves Dubai, I just said, yeah, this would be a good place to come and live in and work in, right?
Yeah.
But then we'd probably say that anywhere we go on holiday and we like it, but then when it actually comes to living and working, obviously it may not be the same. So for us, when we were looking at opportunities, so this was back in the UK, you know, obviously the weather in the UK is different to here, the whole, everything is different, and both Anuradha and myself, it was just the two of us at that time, and we were like, okay, where could we go and just do something different? And we both decided, you know, Dubai is a place where there's a lot of noise, let's just go out and get a feel of what this could be like. What's the worst? You know, we go there, we don't quite like or we don't settle in, and we can always return. So we came out here with that sort of...
The typical two-year, let's go into this for a couple of years and then see how it goes. And we've never looked back, we're sitting at 30.
Yeah, the moment we landed here and, you know, one thing led to another and everything else, it's just fantastic. So that's how it all started. And this is now home. Never go back again.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful. And, you know, I want to know, with the upcoming BNI UAE Expo 2025, how is this going to be different than other, you know, networking opportunities that happen in the Gulf region? What's really going to make it stand out?
So first and foremost, the attendees, if you look at the people who we're expecting to attend, obviously our members are there, but we're inviting the whole business community. These are essentially small or even micro businesses. Right, these are not large corporates. These are small businesses. When I say small businesses, you're looking at as small as a one-man business or a consultant out there, or a small business which probably, you know, employs maybe 10, 20 people. Networking is essential for them. You know, what are the other ways in which they market themselves? They probably do a lot of cold calling. Obviously, these days, social media and digital plays a big part. But ultimately, when you are able to come together with other fellow like-minded people who are in the same boat as you, and you all believe that you can actually help each other, it's fantastic. So we're bringing together, you know, over 1,000 people under one roof, and we have a lot of things planned out for the 2 days. So it's different where it's going to be a celebration over 2 days?
It's a celebration over 2 days. We've done it for 1 day in the past, so it's double in that sense. We have over 100 exhibitors under one roof. And then we also have a lot of educational topics, a lot of learning topics. Again, we hear about AI, we hear about all the different things that's happening out there. But how does a small business take it on? How do they kind of how do they incorporate it in their business? So our education panels and discussion key points are all about business-related skills that they can take on board and grow, you know, and implement in their business. But also we have a lot of activities like speed networking. Now, I'd like to just explain, speed networking is a bit like the speed dating kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're talking business here. And the idea is just to get connected first and understand who you're meeting. Mm. It's not about selling your product in those 90 seconds or minutes, you know. It's about just trying to meet as many people and trying to understand, would I be of benefit to them? Would they be of benefit to me? And then outside of that meeting, take it further, meet them and explore what opportunities could be there. So it's over 2 days, and there are lots of those kind of sessions. Obviously, there's a lot of just open networking taking place as well. And it's open to the business community as well. It's not just for BNI members. So this is open to the wider community. And so you never know who you may meet there and that link could lead to.
We have an app, right? So anybody who's attending, obviously, we download the app. And talking about AI and technology, the app can actually match you up based on how you complete your profile.
Oh, wow.
So it'll give you a recommendation. Like it'll say, look, okay, if... well, you're attending. BJ is going to be there. Anna is going to be there. And we recommend that you may want to connect with them. Then you can reach out and say, hey, listen, I'm going to be there.
Oh.
But it'll do it based on maybe something which is common. It could be a common interest or it could be some sort of business engagement. So that helps, right? Because if you're going to be in a room of 1,000 people, how are you going to work your way around, right? So speed networking is going to be definitely one way to do it. But then the other thing is giving you guidance. Okay, you may just want to connect with the other person.
I'm just curious about something, you know, with this like speed networking. How exactly, you know, is it going to be structured in the event? And, you know, do you guys have any examples of like really inspiring stories that have like come from this speed networking that are memorable to you?
I'm not sure whether I can relate the stories directly to the speed networking, because actually what happens is in BNI, members are always meeting and connecting each other. We have over 40 chapters. So here, you know, all these members are going to come together. Other people who are not members come together in the room. And in a short space, you know, they'll get a chance to meet each other. We kind of give them some guidance on, you know, what you want to say. So each person will get 2 minutes to ask questions. The other person gets 2 minutes. And then it moves to the next person.
So they move on.
So in a 1 hour, you'll pretty much meet probably about 30 people, 20, 30 people, you engage with them. Now, talking about success stories, that happens much later. It happens where, you know, I meet you. Okay, you know what? I'm going to follow up with you. Let's meet up for a coffee and then let's see how we can explore and discuss opportunities. Now, does all that get recorded? Yes, but a lot of it is actually kept confidential as well, you know, to respect the person. So can I relate to any direct speed networking success stories? I'm not too sure, but we do have a lot of success stories.
We just have a lot of success stories of people having met. But I'm not sure. Because you're just sowing the seed. You don't know what's going to come out of it, right? Mm. It could be an oak tree that grows on 10 years later, or it's something that's just a sapling. So it's very different. But the arrangement of speed networking is arranged such that you have people sitting across tables.
Yeah.
And you have the set time, and then you move on to the next person. And it's about just ensuring that you are prepared with your pitch in terms of what you want to say to the other person and vice versa.
One thing is for sure, talking about success stories, it's so popular. So every time we've done these events, you know, we do one speed networking session. But because of the demand and the number of people who want to be part of it, this time we're actually going to do 3 sessions. Because we know that the demand is in, everybody wants to come and do it.
And once through shorter times, like, oh no, we just had one and we missed out on it, or it's not enough. So we're going to do it through the day. And so the more opportunities to meet different kinds of people.
Yeah, you guys are really listening to the people there. And, you know, something that I want to know, just to go into like a deeper note, you know, how do you see, you know, Expo 2025 playing a role in, you know, building those cross-border relationships across the GCC, South Asia, and Africa? You know, what's the far-reaching impact here?
Well, given that we are a global network, we not only have the local members and the business community joining us, we're going to have people coming in from Qatar, from Oman, from the Philippines.
I think we also have guests coming from Australia, right?
Australia, from Greece. So we got people coming from across from India. We've got a number of members. Again, because it's a global network, people have access to each other. You know, everybody gets access. When you become part of BNI, you get access to the director and the app. And then when you reach out to the other person and introduce yourself as a fellow BNI member, you know, that's a whole barrier down as well. So it just makes it easier for people to connect with other like-minded people. They might be from a different part of the world, but we're one big family. And it's easy then just to sort of start talking.
And I also think that everybody wants to come to Dubai to do business. And there couldn't be a better opportunity to come other than this weekend, because it's a business expo. You're going to meet so many people in one place. So I think a lot of people are taking that as an opportunity to come from the outside to explore what Dubai has to offer and meet like-minded people. And then that takes it back. I mean, one of the success stories I was thinking of was, you know, how a group of our members went to Uganda and started a new business there. They went as a group. They wanted to explore because we have BNI in Uganda. And, you know, they just went to test the waters, as you may say, did that for a year, and some of them have now established a full-fledged office there. So cross-borders really works, because when you're going to a new country that has BNI, you are relying on the trusted network that you have on the ground, which is an access that you have as being a BNI member.
That's really beautiful. You know, we obviously, you mentioned this at the beginning, I believe. So BNI UAE members generated 700 million dirhams in business in 2024 alone. You know, can you share a few more success stories like this, or sectors where you've seen like such explosive growth?
Well, you know, if I were to ask out there which is the industry which has been booming in the UAE, in Dubai, I think real estate is one of them, right? So we have a lot of people in that industry, not just, you know, buying and selling real estate, but everything to do with real estate. So starting from design, from fit out, from interiors, from supplying all the different products that go into that industry. We have a number of members who are, you know, across in that industry. And if I speak to any one of them or if I hear success stories, that definitely has been one of the very strong sectors. We have something called power teams in chapters. So you'll have all these people doing different things. So they all complement each other and synergize. And when you go into any of these chapters and you're seeing tons of referrals and business happening, most of them tend to be in that industry. So that's definitely one. The other one I would probably say is related, again, to digital and tech. Because, you know, this, the pace of that is so fast, the way it's evolving.
And ever-changing,
So again, you know, you've got a lot of players across the board in media, in tech. So that's another industry. What could be another one? I think
every other industry does in some way relate to both of these, because even if you look at real estate and the tech people, everybody's making short reels about what projects are coming up, and you know, so everybody seems to somehow benefit from the real estate industry in some way.
I think the other one I would say, business services, right? So because of the large influx of people coming in and the amount of new businesses starting up, so people helping with new business setup. And then all the ancillary services around that. So you know, once you set up a business, you need legal advice. You then need, you know, somebody who's going to help you with your accounts and your financials. HR, you know, you're going to have to now take on people. So pretty much I would say across most of the different categories. And I think that's one of the reasons we can attribute to our success. Because all of them are seeing the value and benefiting, and there's enough out there, so more and more people want to become part of this.
And, you know, just on the topic of those people, something that I noticed is, you know, you guys have so much diversity there. And, you know, what I want to know is, how does that diversity really shape BNI and the value that the members are actually getting from the organizations?
It's a double-edged sword, I would say. So it's great that, obviously, you know, Dubai is a melting pot. We have so many nationalities here. I think the nicer part is when anybody comes from abroad, you see, when you come from your own country, there is a cultural way in which you do things. But when you come to Dubai, you are kind of testing the norms from where you've come. So it's great because people are open to meeting more people and just, you know, seeing where that takes them. But it can sometimes be a double-edged sword, because we don't always have, culturally, everybody's very different. So if I share a joke, it may just sound really wrong to somebody else. But I think in general, the fact that everybody comes here and wants to meet new people, it has opened so many doors for so many people in places they would have never thought of. So that's been a really great success from that point of view. And the fact that in general, people communities are growing here. There's a lot of spirit of collaboration. So people are finding collaborative initiatives with each other, even though they're not from the same culture. And it's a different way of doing business. And that's, I think, quite synonymous to what Dubai generally has to offer, is how do you do things differently?
Yeah.
And that's kind of showing up in BNI as well.
Absolutely. And diversity, not just in terms of nationality, but also in terms of age and gender. You know, I would say probably about a third of our members are women now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. And then in terms of the age groups, we have members as young as in their mid-20s, and then we'll have members as senior as probably in their 70s. And each of them brings a different perspective, right?
Oh, wow. Definitely.
We have a member. We have a member who's probably in his early 70s, and we ask him, what keeps you wanting to be part of this? And he says, well, you know, I may be 70, but I'm still very young. And for me to remain relevant, I want to be engaged with a group of youngsters, youth. And then when you ask a young person who is joining, who's just probably starting out in business, or, you know, they've taken on, they're maybe second generation continuing the family business, what brings them to the table? And they're like, well, I have all these experienced people out there who can be my mentors. So I think everybody feeds in something or the other.
Of
and that diversity,
other.
I think, is just incredible.
And, you know, something else that I want to know is, you know, you guys are really great at, you know, building scalable, structured networking. You know, what are the technologies that you guys are using to, you know, enhance that networking?
So I think first thing is we do keep to the basics. You know, when it comes to BNI building chapters, we keep saying is, let's stick to basics, because the basics are building trust. That you can't replicate it with anything else. You've just got to be there and meet the person to build the trust. But the way we're using technology to scale this is, again, to be more relevant to what the general generation wants out there. We have a lot more younger population joining us. And with tech and everything, we now have because earlier our option format was only in person. But now we offer a hybrid model as well, whereby, you know, once a month you meet in person and the other weeks you're online. So that's where the tech part comes in. That's how it becomes scalable, because people travel a lot now. They do businesses outside of the country. So these are the kind of things that can stop them from being a member because they can't be at the meeting physically. But having a hybrid model, having an online model available, means that you can still be and get the benefit of the network and be part of the network, yet allows you to do what you need to do for your business as well.
But ultimately, I think the structure comes down to processes and systems. Everything is laid out. And given that we are a franchise, we've got to have consistency in the brand. So anybody who experienced a BNI meeting in any other part of the world will have exactly the same experience. Our processes in which we support our members, our chapters, it is pretty much the same.
Yeah.
If we're gonna, so innovation is there. One of our core values is the traditions and innovations. So an innovation obviously comes from the members. But when we come across something which is quite innovative, you got to then test it out and pilot it. So we kind of put it in a safe, controlled environment, see if this really works. Do they bring value? And then we roll it out across to all the other members and, you know, across the world. So I think the beauty that it's a franchise, it's a global brand, that helps.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I know that you guys really want to have over 2,000 members at some point. What is your long-term vision for the UAE? You know, how are you going to do that?
How? So we are on this mission, you know, the momentum is strong. It's like kind of a flywheel. Our vision for 2025 by the end of this year is actually to be 2025, meaning 2025 by 2025. We are at 1,500 right now. So you're looking at a growth of probably about 25% between now and the end of the year. That's going to happen because of, you know, all the things that we've just spoken. What happens beyond that? The growth will continue as far as membership goes, because we're now expanding out into the other Emirates. We just launched in Ras Al Khaimah last month, and we're about to launch in Abu Dhabi. So we do want to expand out, of course, there is a lot of scope. But then most importantly, at the end of the whole day, is making sure that every member, regardless of what business that they might be, large or small, they're getting the return on investment of their time and money.
Mm.
So we want to make sure that we can retain as many members. We have a very good and healthy retention, but we want to try and retain as many members and add more, and making sure every single member is generating a good ROI, and most importantly, having fun.
Having fun
in that journey. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's just not all about business. It's making sure that we keep the fun in the fundamentals.
Because when you're meeting somebody on a weekly basis, you're going to get to know them, you're building relationships with them. You want to look forward to meeting them rather than, oh my gosh, I've just got to go to this meeting and meet somebody. So there are a lot of other elements that come into play to make this success.
It's about community. And, you know, just like on a final note, do you guys have, you know, any last inspiring message for our audience and something that you really want to tell them?
Well, if this has intrigued anybody to want to know more or want to come and attend our event, 9th and 10th of May at the JAFSA One Convention Center, and you can get your tickets on platinumlist.net.
Thank you so much, guys. It was lovely having you today. Thank you so much for coming in, and thank you so much for watching, everyone. This is Werd Ahmed, and this is BJ and Anuradha Shah, the National Directors of BNI, and this is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, a part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you tomorrow.